time now for our Monday panel. First up on our agenda today, Congress back in Washington. Let the first fight of the new year begin. Democrats are pushing for an extension for unemployment benefits that expired at the end of last year for over a million Americans. Who's going to win in this battle? Let's take it to our panel. We've got Sandra Smith right here in studio. Charles Payne is with us. They're both here to weigh in. Plus, we've got Matt Welch, co-host of the new Fox Business show, you know, The Independents. And this is now, Charles, GOP versus Democrats. But the Democrats are saying, Gene Sperling is saying, hey, this is going to create 200,000 jobs if you extend unemployment benefits for the entire year.
I mean, by that math, we should have like 20 million jobs right now. I think President Obama, though, has come out and said he wants a three-month extension. This is not even about... I mean, they always put the veneer of economics around these issues that really are more about heart-tugging, you know, the fairness doctrine, those kind of things, which is, in my mind, has nothing to do with an improving economy. Maybe the Republicans blink on a three-month extension because I think at this point maybe they want to focus solely on Obamacare with the midterm elections coming up and not be seen as the bad, mean old Republicans.
The problem is all of these extended benefit payments are of questionable benefit, okay? If you look at the numbers, how many people are actually unemployed now in 2012 versus 2007, the number of people unemployed up 84%. We have a screen on this, I think. But jobless benefits paid to them up 184%. It's almost tripled. And yet the National Bureau of Economic Research came out with a study a couple months ago, and it said, we think the reason for higher, longer unemployment is because of extended unemployment benefits.
Sandra,
why are we doing this?
Sandra, it's also about minimum wage. These are the two things. I mean, the Democrats don't want to talk about health care anymore. They want to shift the conversation. Mm-hmm. Minimum wage, unemployment, those are the two big fights.
Well, and the big fight you're going to hear from Democrats is that President George W. Bush was the one to first extend the insurance program. That was back when unemployment was sitting around 5%. That was a bipartisan effort. So, of course, they're going to be first to point that out. But this is a different situation with unemployment around 7%. There's a hefty price tag on this, Cheryl. We're talking about $6.5 billion for over a million Americans to extend these insurance benefits. This is different times, different strokes for different folks. I think that people have to take into consideration where we are in this economy versus the last time.
It's almost $100 billion a year we're spending now, and the crisis, the recession was supposed to have ended in 2009.
Well, you can't run on the economy being great and argue for a higher minimum wage. You know, you can't, I don't see how you can have it both ways, even in the world of politics,
but
I guess you
that's
might.
That's all they've got. All Democrats have in the year 2014 is not the record of the last 6 years. It's not any kind of job creation. It's this sense of income inequality and Bill de Blasio and Elizabeth Warren and minimum wage and now this. These are all symbolic at heart. They don't actually have to do with growing the economy or improving anything.
Right.
It's a way to
it's
try to
It's the exact
to make,
opposite, right? I mean, aren't they really saying capitalism itself is inherently unfair? It doesn't work, and we need a more social system.
That's why the Pope is the most popular man on the left.
You know what they're doing tomorrow, Charles? The White House is actually bringing up a bunch of unemployed Americans.
Yeah.
The White House.
I mean, and how do they afford that trip? And shouldn't they be looking for work instead of standing behind the president? What is happening to us? It's all artifice. Yeah. It's all optics.
I have a feeling that they might be picking up the tag. As in you, the taxpayer, is picking up the tab of that one. Well, let's move on to our next topic because it's a good one as well. Republican Senator Rand Paul looking to sue the government over the NSA surveillance program, creating critics from within his own party like Peter King of New York. Take a listen.
By bringing a class action suit where we have hundreds of thousands of people who come forward and say, hey, my cell phone records are mine, unless you go to a judge and ask a judge specifically for my records, you shouldn't be able to have a general warrant.
Either he's totally uninformed or he's part of that hate America crowd that I thought a leftist in the 1960s. In any event, he doesn't deserve to be in the United States Senate for spreading that type of misperception and absolute lies, to be honest with you.
Matt, I mean, these were harsh words from Peter King. Peter King's a good friend of this network, and he's really coming out.
Peter King in Republican politics in 2014 is what Tanya Harding was to Nancy Kerrigan. Rand Paul polls, actually, nationally. Peter King has started his sort of trial balloon as a presidential candidate specifically to run against Rand Paul. He's been singing this tune for the last 6 months that Rand Paul is a borderline traitorist, that he doesn't belong in the Senate, and all these kinds of things. Go out there in the marketplace of electoral politics. Let's see how that works out.
He understands that you're judged by the size of the guy you pick a fight with. Rand Paul is a far bigger name, so he probably brings more attention to himself. But for Rand Paul, just, I'm going to sue the government. When, dude, you're in the Senate. Pass a law, man. I thought that's what you guys do. Why would you file suit against federal government instead of round up the votes to pass a new law?
Because you can't. I mean, the law is the Constitution. That's the point that he's been making, is that we can't have consent to the governed in this country when we don't know what our own government is doing, spying relying on us. He thinks that we're violating the Constitution. There's at least one judge that agrees with him. So let's play it out.
But here's Peter King. But you know what, Charles? Here's what Peter King actually did bring up. And I think that this is an important point. He says, look, we've had terrorists try to attack the New York City subway systems. That was stopped because of NSA surveillance. I mean, what would Rand Paul be saying now?
I want to see a proof of that.
Well, even if there is proof of it, I mean, the scope and the breadth of this thing is so amazing to say, you know, we stopped one there and one here. We're talking about everyone's records of every aspect, every form of communication. Are we all potential suspects? It's out of control. It's 1,000% out of control.
Don't you want to be safe, though? And we're not potential suspects. Nobody is listening to my phone calls.
But this didn't keep us safe. This didn't stop Boston. This didn't stop any number of overseas terror attacks.
We can't risk the Constitution when we talk about being safe. Rand Paul specifically pointed that this is what we fought the Revolutionary War over. He's talking about bringing this thing to the Supreme Court. He's talking big words here. I think bottom line, his message is very clear, and I think he's going to let a lot of people to back him on this, is that they should have to specifically ask you and target you if they want your phone records. And I think at the end of the day, he's going to have a lot of people backing him on this.
I actually think there's safety in the fact that the government is looking at hundreds of millions of stuff. It means that they're going to be very bad, and they don't even care what I'm doing, okay? I think instead, I wish what bothers me about it is it's laziness. The government ought to be putting agents on the ground and informants and ought to be going after isolated
members.
There's
definitely a smart way to go about this, and this right here, to your point, just is like a blanket, throw a blanket over the whole thing. I bet you we've missed more stuff than we probably caught because of this.
And meanwhile, they're sharing it with people like the Drug Enforcement Administration. They're using this for non-terrorism reasons in law enforcement.
I tell you what, though, but seriously, man, I mean, one of the things that Rand Paul also said was that the head of the NSA should be put in jail with Edward Snowden. I mean,
he lied under oath to Congress. Is that a jailable offense? That's the question.
I guess maybe we. I guess
did he know people, he lied?
I guess I'm the
question is whether he
knew he lied. He knew he lied.
All right, well, let's move on to our third panel, because this also is pretty darn interesting. Just a few years ago, it was one of the hottest industries to invest in. But after fiascos like Solyndra, the clean energy industry has taken a big dive. And in a piece on 60 Minutes last night, critics put much of the blame for the industry's rise and fall on Silicon Valley investors who they say, quote, overpromised, right, underdelivered on their green energy promises. All right, Matt, do you agree with that? You think they screwed up here? Silicon Valley?
Yeah. I mean,
$100 billion in
great. You know, if Silicon Valley spends $100 trillion to try to figure out some great new thing, I've got no problem with it. My problem is when my taxpayer money goes down rabbit holes and boondoggles at nothing, which has been the case since Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter was going to solve the energy crisis by investing in syn-fuels plants. Well, how did that go? It goes like most government investment into solving technological problems go, which is down the drain.
I mean, I kind of split the baby on this one, because on one hand, I feel like the 60 Minutes story doesn't have a point. If private investors lost money in green energy, I wish them well.
That's
good
fine.
Luck next time.
Right. That's
but the thing is, a lot of the private investor money was drawn because government was in there seeding it. The Obama administration putting out $100 billion or more in green energy. Private investor money follows that government money. So there's kind of a complicity there.
Take that out and the incentive dries up, and then it don't distort the market as much.
But Vinod Khosla, who was also featured, by the way, Charles, in 60 Minutes, he himself has lost about $150 million. Great, he has that to lose, but, you know, the taxpayers also
better
lose.
Better him than us.
You know, government picking winners and losers goes all the way back to the railroads, right? I mean, but here's the thing. What makes it even more probably despicable are these were in a lot of cases friends of the White House. You know, the people who backed Solyndra happen to be heavy donors. The people, I remember the Biden at the inner 123, A123 at the plant, and you know, they happened to use these. It's not just that the government's bad at picking winners and losers. In this particular case, it was pure crony capitalism with our money.
Well, I don't know if we can rule out that they're not bad at picking winners and losers, but we're not supposed to be in that game. And at the end of the day, if there's a private investor that takes on the risk of investing in clean energy, they're entitled to do so, and it's their own money at risk. Now, the government was putting our tax dollars at risk, and that's the problem.
Let's remember one thing, though. I don't think all government-funded research is bad. I think government funding of pure basic research is a needed thing,
like what,
especially
though?
At a time when research companies and tech companies have
been you're right.
What is that, though?
Well, you know, before we decoded the genome map of the human human code, government had plowed billions of dollars into basic research underneath it. Finally helps lead a private effort that finally outraced government did a far better job. But there's still some basic building blocks required.
But research is different than. But critics are saying, though, that just because you know how to you founded Sun Microsystems doesn't mean you know anything about the energy business. And that,
yes, but
that they're they're being arrogant. I mean, Silicon Valley people arrogant? Yeah. No,
well,
you're kidding me, but it's true.
People who are going to disrupt any established industry are going to usually come from the outside, right? Who's going to solve the driverless car problem? It's not going to be the car companies, no matter how many billions they've gotten from the federal government to do that. It's going to be Google.
But Google did lose $1 billion of its own money because it thought it could solve the energy green problem, and then it kind of pulled out and said, never mind.
The amount of energy that they suck up, one search sucks up so much energy, we don't even know out there how much. So they should be trying to find alternatives.
Reduce their electricity.
But I will say, we had this conversation to a certain degree this morning on Varney. Mm. Even Eddie Lampert thought he could run a retailer. You know, I mean, these guys just think they're the masters of the universe. And I say, God bless them, as long as it's your money and your investors' money.
And not ours.
Charles Payne, Matt Welch, Sandra Smith, who, by the way, went and saw Stuart Varney before she saw me this morning. I'm a little upset. I'm just saying. How long has it been since we've seen each other?
I know. I missed you.
She's back.